This is Disrupting Recruitment, a podcast focused on moving recruitment from a reactive to a proactive state. We talk to experts as well as recruitment marketers living it day to day to learn how to improve inbound as well as outbound and other recruitment marketing strategies. And it all starts now. All right, so welcome back to another episode of Disrupting Recruitment. We have James Mackey here. So for those who, I guess, are not familiar with you and who you are, why don't we start off with a little bit of who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So I'm the founder and CEO of a company called Secure Vision. And basically, we provide an embedded recruitment model, meaning that our recruiters operate essentially like internal recruiters for as long as a company needs them. And then when a company doesn't need them, they can scale them back and end the contract. So we're a scalable solution primarily for the tech industry. So we've worked with over 150 tech companies over the past 7 years. And I have three teams. I have a team that specializes in tech recruiting. So engineers, product folks. And then I also have a revenue team that focuses on sales, marketing, anything go-to-market focused. And then I also have a G&A team. So it could be like people ops, finance, anything that doesn't fall within tech and revenue, really. So we've worked a ton of companies that are early stage startups, seed, series A, growth stage, series B to D, and then late growth stage IPO, and a handful of enterprise clients too, to help them hire talent.
So I stumbled across your LinkedIn profile somewhere along the line. I probably commented on something and you commented on it or something. So I definitely started really liking what you were doing and following your content. What's your thoughts on employer branding, and what companies really need to be doing to be able to show their culture and attract candidates to their brands, to their companies, sure. You know, those sorts of things?
I mean, quite honestly, just the act of investing in employer branding, I think, does tell you a lot about a company's culture, right? Like, if you think about it, like, going to a company is such a huge decision, life decision, right? It's going to impact most of your hours that you're alive for the next, you know, few years, right? Or even if it's just a year, right? So it's a big decision for people. And companies that understand that are going to help produce assets to help people make informed decisions. So, you know, if you want top talent's obviously going to have the most opportunities available on the marketplace. And you have to be able to produce assets for them and distribute those assets in order to get, you know, not only the biggest funnel, but the highest quality funnel for your organization. So, you know, investing in, you know, a lot of videos from employees that are in scale positions, whatever you're hiring for the most, is really important. Putting together different, you know, virtual kind of pamphlets or whatever else on frequently asked questions. Sharing, obviously, parts of, you know, about the culture, values, but more importantly, like how values like translate into actions, right? Like on a day-to-day basis. And I think all that's really important. I think also, bigger companies get this, but some of the earlier stage companies we work with kind of miss the mark on branding. They're like, okay, we need to focus on product or revenue, and branding is just not something that we need to focus on. And if your website is not incredibly modern, doesn't look good, if any of the content you're producing, any visual content, anything like that does not look great, people are going to associate your brand as not high quality or not a category leader. So, bigger companies typically don't have that issue. But I think just how you show up online in terms of, the quality of your website, the quality of the content you're producing, all of that are going to, impact the candidates that you can pull in as well as the clients, right? Now everybody wants to work with companies that are crushing it. They're growing, they're the category leader or becoming that. So you have to be able to kind of translate that kind of magic or excitement into the content you're producing online to candidates, for sure.
You know, you raised an interesting point there with candidates versus clients. And we talk a lot about how marketing and recruitment and sourcing, and it's all sales and marketing related. So many recruiters forget that what they do, the impact that has on the company's brand, because, you know, you have sales and marketing over here trying to create a good image for the company, And then recruiters over here are about to piss off 99 people because they're only hiring one, right? And so we really have to be careful in how those two brands overlap, because they really, really do overlap. And everything that your consumer side is doing impacts your ability to recruit, and everything that your recruitment marketing and TA and hiring does impacts, you know, your ability. If somebody has a really, really bad candidate experience, that may impact their decision to buy from that brand in the future. And
yeah, sure.
That, like, that's something that often gets overlooked.
Yeah, man. It's also like, you know, if you have a really good candidate experience, then it should be very transparent and reasonable as to why it's not the right fit. Right.
Yeah.
And if you handle that the right way, then people that you've even identified, if you do it the right way, it should be a mutual understanding where, like, the candidate gets it, you get it. And you know, some of that is positioning and, you know, word tracking and whatnot. But the goal would be for both the candidate and the company to come to an agreement that not now, right? It's just not the right time. And if you handle that properly, then, you know, people will still refer other candidates to you for future roles and talk about the quality of the experience. I mean, you know, you're really crushing it if you get an interview review on Glassdoor from somebody who said, great experience, I didn't even get the job.
You can
get, you know, you start to see some of that type of feedback, which we have, you know, you're doing it the right way. But yeah, you definitely, candidate experience is very important, right? I mean, not only for the people that you hire, but again, yeah, like a lot of the people that you engage with, you're not going to hire. And you gotta, that's why it's important to really be invested in relationships, understand the power of relationships, and that, you know, these are not just, you know, numbers in a funnel. These are real people that are going to have robust networks and their roles are going to change. They're going to be moving into different positions in the future. And, you need to be very aware of that. And, you know, hopefully for some people, it's like more intuitive where they're just like really into relationships and they want to help people. But, you know, even if you don't feel like that natural extrovert that's always networking and getting out there, like, you just got to remember, like, it, you know, it's in everybody's best interest to just continuously, you know, it's every touch point, whether it be with a potential customer or a potential candidate, is a brand opportunity to make a good impression. Like, and you got to be willing to play that long game. And sometimes you need to treat people well, not only because, like, hopefully that's like a core part of who you are, but, you know, again, just from a business outcome perspective too, it's like, you know, you're just making all those good brand impressions in the long run, that's going to always pay off. And so it's, you know, even if you're held to a monthly or quarterly goal, understanding that you're working toward a long game, not only for your employer, maybe you're not going to work for the same employer 20 years, but the relationships you develop throughout your career, it's like, that's your social capital. Like, those are things that are going to benefit you in the long run. So if you're thinking like, look, I got this monthly quota at my job, or I got to hit XYZ hires, you got to remember yourself too. It's like, okay, even if you're not going to be at this company 10 years from now, everybody that you meet is still going to be part of your network, and the strength of your network is going to have a direct impact on your ability to be successful in your careers. It makes sense for individuals to invest in the relationships. It makes sense for the companies. It's just a good business practice to create great experiences for people. I think that, you know, TA departments should be obsessing on that. Companies should be obsessing on that. Like, how do we create great frictionless experiences across the board for everybody interacting with our business, whether it's clients, candidates, vendors, partners? Relationship experience should be top of mind always.
100%. I remember a company that I used to work for years and years ago, with one of their top salespeople was a guy who kept coming in and buying product from. And they're like, dude, you're in here. You obviously love this product. Like, we need a salesperson. Why don't you work it? So he did. And he eventually ended up buying the company. So, you know, he's now an owner of the company. So, that's an incredible story of how you can turn a passionate consumer into, a potential rock star within your organization.
That's really cool.
And the other thing, like you mentioned, that caught my attention there is you never know who somebody else knows. And so you may have somebody that applies for a job that is totally the wrong fit, not the right candidate at all. And so your gut reaction is to just tell them to piss off, essentially, and ignore them. But, you know, that person may know somebody else that is the rock star that you've been looking for. And if they have a great experience and that person that they know is looking for a job, they may say, you should go apply here. Like, I didn't get a job there, but they're looking and it seemed like a good company to work for. So,
right. And I'd say, I think it's like pitching the underlying philosophy. It's like, it's really important to try not to have the perspective that, like, when you look at relationships, like, what's in it for me? Like, what, you know, that's a dangerous path to go down, because if you're looking through that lens, then you're not going to be fully engaged in each person and each conversation that you're having. When if you can approach relationships from the perspective of like, how can I give and contribute and help this person? It has nothing to do with what title they have or, you know, what they do. It's just like, hey, I'm here with this person right now. How can I really invest in this relationship? And the most successful people that I know, they don't enter conversations like, what's in it for me? You know, the people that are best at building relationships and building networks, they're focused on how can I help the person on the other side of this? And that is truly what they want. It's not like a strategy, right? I mean, they're just like wired that way. So I think in recruiting, we have to always be asking ourselves, like, can we embody that kind of belief system as much as possible? Like, let's just show up as our best selves on every call with everybody we're interacting with and just try to create great experiences for people. And if it's not a fit, that's okay. But like, you can't be dismissive. Like, when you're speaking with candidates, really in any part of life, like if you're at a networking event or you're talking with potential clients or, you know, you're whatever situation, it's never a good thing to be dismissive of people based on their position in life or if they're relevant or not to an outcome you want to produce. Just show up as your best self, try to give value, try to be kind. And, you know, the people that do that always seem to have the most fulfilling life and have like an abundance of success coming their way. So it's just a very important life lesson.
Well, you look at the brands and people that have really succeeded in launching, you know, they put out content online that helps other people. They're not putting out content about their product, about themselves, about their company. They're putting out content that helps other people. And that really is part of building that relationship. So
yeah, right.
But on that note of building relationships, I think one of the things that recruiters really struggle with in being able to build relationships is one of the things that they're scored on, their metrics that they're that are important is time to fill. And if I'm worried about how fast I have to fill this position, I don't have time to build relationships with everybody. So what's your thoughts on that as, you know, an important, I know in what you guys do and your organization, I'm sure filling a role fast is important, but so how do you balance that? And what metrics should we be focusing on with recruiters and making sure that we're hitting that target and making sure that they have time to build those relationships?
Yeah. It's time to fill is tricky because obviously we have business outcomes we need to achieve. We need to hire the people in order to produce those outcomes. And so time is of the essence. I think the challenge is like, you never want to solve for speed before quality, right? You always want to focus on quality before speed. So the most important thing, even like getting, before we get into metrics, is you need to have an experienced hiring team, because otherwise none of the metrics matter. Like, you could take offer acceptance rate, but if you're hiring people that aren't great, like, who cares, right? And so the quality of hire is also like, obviously it's pretty difficult to come to a, you know, how do you really measure that? So I don't like that metric. I just like the idea of, okay, let's focus on getting a really great hiring team in place. I don't mean just talent acquisition. I mean, who are the hiring managers, right? You want a VP of engineering or VP of sales that has built out a team before. Like, part of their core responsibility is hiring. And when you're interviewing that person, you want to talk to them about team building. How do they identify A players? How many people have they hired? How many people have they fired, right? What percentage of their team was achieving performance outcomes? Like, you know, what environments did they come from? Did they work in highly relevant environments where they had to attract similar talent? All of that stuff is way more important than any of the metrics. Because if you have great people that are experienced at hiring people, that's what's going to ultimately drive the outcome, right? Once you have that, if you don't have that, it doesn't matter what you track. Everything's going to, you're not going to hire top talent. But if you have that in place, then you want to look at conversion rates. So your holy grail, like once you have like a great hiring team in place, you need to start looking at like offer acceptance rate. All right. So we know we have a great hiring team in place that knows how to evaluate talent. They know how to identify A players. How many of those A players are we actually able to convert? Of the people that we want to hire, how many can we hire? That metric becomes important once you have an experienced leadership team in place. But again, if you don't, you really need to get one. You need to work people up or out and make sure that your leadership team knows how to hire, because you're never going to, you know, the company's not going to scale. I don't care if you're small or large, like you need to have that. So offer acceptance rate, and then you work your way back to other conversion rates down funnel or up funnel rather. So
yeah,
honestly, like I run recruiting orgs like Revenue Leaders runs revenue orgs. So I'm very metrics data driven. I'm looking at conversion rates at each step of the funnel. I'm looking at top win and loss reasons. So why did somebody convert? Why are they interested? Why did we move forward? Are we consistent in that? Right? Or, you know, do we see any consistency as why candidates move forward? What are the top three reasons candidates are dropping out at each stage of the funnel? Can we solve for any of those? What do we need to filter up to the executive team or to head of HR or whoever it might be that can help us make a certain adjustment? What are the inefficiencies in the process? Like if we have like a personality test that doesn't do jack shit to actually help us like hire somebody, how do we convince that hiring manager to stop doing that? Right? How can we use data to tell the story of why they should consider something else? Right? So it's really just about tracking conversion rates, top win and top loss reasons, and then looping that into like a feedback to make the adjustments. And then once you've solved for quality, right? So like once you know, okay, I got the right hiring team in place, where conversions are at a good spot, then it's like, all right, how do we push the time to fill and make it, you know, a little bit faster?
But how do we like do all of that faster?
Yeah. So like if you're like a head of TA or like a VP of TA, that's like, I wouldn't even be looking at that stuff for like the first 6 months to a year. Like I would be focused on, ideally, like you want to be like a chief people officer, because then you can look at like, who's my hiring team? And you could talk with the, you know, with the executive teams, if you really have the right leaders in place to hire the right people. Because my first would be an evaluation of how good of a job are the function leaders doing at hiring for their organization, right? If you're a director of TA, you're not going to have any influence about who's in those roles, right? So it depends on your point of impact. But then you're focusing on offer acceptance rate, conversion rates up funnel, top win, top loss reasons. Once you've done all of that, then you can go into time to fill. But, you know, the hard part is that your CEO is going to be telling you like, I need the hires yesterday, right? And so the challenging part is like, it's damned if you do, damned if you don't, right? Like if you don't focus on time to fill because you know what's best for the organization, then, you know, whatever executive is going to be breathing down your neck saying you're not going fast enough. But then if you hire too fast, you're going to get the wrong people in the door, and then they're going to be pissed off that these people aren't producing, and they're going to say, I need a better recruiter. So yeah. It's like,
I can hire in 10 minutes.
Right. So it's like you want to find a leadership team that is aligned philosophically with you when it comes to talent acquisition. Like it's okay for them to be like, hey, fast, but they also need to be like, hey, look, here's the data. Here's the concern. If we do this before this, bad things are going to happen. When you solve for speed before quality, we're going to get screwed. And it's going to take you much longer because right now you have terrible attrition in this department. We can't get, you know, where this position is churning every 6 months. Right? We're spending all this money on contingent recruiters or whatever it might be, 40K a hire, and they're not even staying a year. And so it's like, that's a huge problem. So if you can sell that story of like, we have turnover, we're not hiring great people, And it's ultimately, we are not achieving business outcomes on a function level. Our revenue org isn't maturing the way we want it to, or our engineering org is not maturing the way we want it to, because we are filling the roles with people that aren't the best fit. That's the story you have to tell. And then you educate, like, you have to be willing to educate. But if you're in a company that it's like every quarter and every like month and quarter, you are fighting and like you were trying to explain the same thing over and over, just leave. Like, some people just aren't going to get it, right? They're not going to be wired to view talent acquisition that way. And if you're not working for a business that's optimized toward talent acquisition, you should leave and find one, right?
Obviously, like, you're in the wrong.
Yeah, man. So like if you're an engineer, right? Or a product person, you want to be in a company that puts that above all else, right? If you're, you know, in marketing, you want to be in a company that's optimized toward marketing. If you're in talent acquisition, you want to be in a company that understands that people are the primary driver of value and the quality of our people is going to exponentially impact our growth as an organization. And so if you could find that company, then you can sell this story with data, and you should be able to buy yourself time to make sure you have the right team, make sure you have the right conversion rates, and then you can focus on speed afterwards. So that's how you do it. And again, it's, if you feel like you're banging your head against the wall and you've told this story the right way, that it probably means you need you need counterparts in your leadership team that want to understand what you do, which I think that's the challenging part, right?
Yeah, and I find that actually getting quality data is sometimes difficult for TA teams. I mean, not to do a shameless candidate hub plug, but that's why we focus on making sure that TA teams have the right data to be able to understand where their best quality candidates are coming from and what they need to do to optimize their applicant completion rates and conversion rates. Because if you don't understand all of those pieces of the puzzle, it's a guessing game the whole way through. And you're just trying to solve for a metric that makes no difference at all. Like I said, I can hire somebody in 5 minutes. So then I go out for a coffee. I'll find somebody who's looking for a job.
Right.
They may not be the right person. They may not be a good fit. They may only last a day, but I hired somebody. I might be putting all of this effort into this channel because we hire a lot of people through that channel, but do they last? Are they good quality people? You know, like there's a ton of different metrics to look at that become really important, and time to fill just seems to be the one that everybody goes to.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's like, it's particularly working on the agency side, right? Like, contingent agencies, there are a few very, very good ones. Most of them are not.
That's a whole rabbit hole right there. Contingency.
Yeah. But they're always saying like, oh, our time to fill for XYZ roles, like 3 weeks. It's like, why are you leading? Lead with who you filled the role with. Like, so what? Okay. You filled it in 3 weeks. You filled it in 2 minutes. I don't give a shit. Like, who's in the role? Right. I mean, like, that should be the primary focus. And again, it's like partially incentivized by hiring managers that don't know what they're doing, right? They're like, no, I need this filled yesterday. But so I feel like sometimes recruiters feel pressured to feed into that. But it's like, come on, when we're talking about speed, it's like, what's the quality that we're actually producing? And, you know, how is the quality of those candidates actually impacting the company? And those are the things that matter. It's speed matters, but just, you know, you're going to go much slower if you don't have the right people, right?
Well, I think from a contingency placement point of view, the problem is most of those agencies don't have the type of relationship that you would have with your clients that, you know, you're a partner, you're a collaborator. Contingency placements are typically, I've been working on it for 6 months and I can't find somebody. We're desperate. Can you fill this role for us quickly? Which is a bad relationship to begin with.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think so. The contingent firms that are very successful, that do good quality, like they're very niche focused. Like they're going to do 100%. Like engineers for growth stage tech companies and, you know, or like salespeople for startups, right? Or for SaaS startups. Or when you can, and you know, there's only a limit to that scale, right? Like they might get to 30, 50, 100, 150 people or whatever. But they just do a really, really good job owning that. where you, you know, where quality really starts to break down, it's like when you have the generalist contingent, right? Where it's like they're doing some sales, marketing, customer success, engineering, G&A, you know, and they're just not, they're not going deep enough. Like, they just don't have a good enough grasp on their client's environment. They don't know how to sell it to the candidates properly. They're pushing so fast for speed, they're going to miss things. So if you're going to go contingent, you got to go with like the expert, like who is the best firm for this one thing?
Who hires CMOs and that's all they do.
Right. Yeah. It's like they do like one thing and it's like, just like they, yeah, it's like fewer promises and just over delivering, right? Like, hey, we don't do 10 things. We do like one thing really well. Like you got to find that if you're going to go contingent.
Yeah. So circling back to our employer brand and for driving candidates, as an RPO or an agency or staffing firm, depending on what side of the pond you're on, you know, how do you build that effective content strategy to try to draw candidates in when you're not selling necessarily your brand, you're trying to place them with a client? You know, what's the best way to do that, I guess?
Yeah. I mean, it so from an RPO, from like an embedded recruiter perspective, we'll make it very apparent to them if they have the resources they need. Usually it's not like amazing, but as long as they have a clean brand online, they have a few resources available. Usually we're not pushing too hard. But we look at, you know, things like the careers page. Careers pages should be like a landing page, right? Like not just an ATS portal, but like a real resource center for candidates. And then it's not something that should just live there. Like it should be good enough to be added to outbound messaging. So it's, you know, dropped into sourcing messages so candidates can look and apply if they're interested. So you have to push it out there into the universe. The other aspect is, you know, I'm a huge advocate of personal brand on LinkedIn. You know, companies, leadership teams, CEOs should be building brands on social that is going to impact the company's ability to recruit top talent. So I think figuring out who can be that voice for the organization, I think, you know, having it be the owner or the founder or the CEO can be really helpful because, you know, they're not going to leave in a year and take that brand with them, right? I mean, it's something that you can build over time, but, you know, it can be other people within the organization as well. But I think just building that personal brand is really important around a few people in the organization. And that does help a lot too. But I think the main thing is like, you have to put whatever content you're developing, it has to be pushed out in the universe. You can't just put it on a careers page and forget about it. Like that can be helpful when people are down funnel, they're engaged with you. It can
help. Well, that's your conversion tool, right?
Yeah, potentially. Yeah. But you also want it to be an awareness tool. Like how do you push out this content and make more people aware of all the cool stuff you're doing?
Yeah. And you know what? I saw your post about as a CEO, it's sometimes difficult to stay on top of building content. And I struggle with that myself. It's hard. You know, I try to put something out there every day, something original. Sometimes I get a little lazy and just share a post and but when I do share a post, I try to put my own spin on it, not just share it. I try to put my own spin on it, but it is difficult. It is, it's not an easy thing to do, but it is an important thing to do. And if you look at like, you know, some of the top leaders in the world that have built brands that people just flock to, it's because, like I said, they put stuff out there they're showing the world who they are. People want to work for people that they really like.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I'm following your content and I really like what you're saying, and I do, you know, if I'm looking for a job, I would say, hey, I really like James and I really like what he says. And I really like, you know, the message that he puts out to the world. And he's a guy that I think I would really like to work with. And so that makes your outbound even a lot easier when you're reaching out. And, you know, I've always said, I may like even people who are not looking for work, if Disney calls, they're picking up that call.
Right.
And so how do you, as a small company, have that sort of impact in the talent market? And it starts with, like you said, the leaders of the organization. If you know you need to grow your marketing team, then get your CMO out there as much as you can. If you know you're going to be growing your engineering team, then get your CTO out there as much as you can.
Yeah.
You know, these are the people that these hires are going to be working with and ultimately looking up to it, and they need to show their presence online, and people need to fall in love with them. So,
yeah, for sure. It just makes it a lot easier because you have to do like less cold outreach, right?
Yeah.
Like it's a lot better when somebody already knows you're a known quantity. You're going to stand out. Like one of the things we started doing too is when we were going through a huge hiring push is I had a team member go through everybody who liked my posts, and anybody that was relevant for the open roles we had, we would send a message to. So we would actually like follow who's engaging with our content and then reach out with relevant people. And it's like, the response rate was nuts. I think it was like pretty much everyone, man. It was like very close to 100% of people that we reached out to was just like, yeah, I'm open to a call. Let's do it. So we've hired like a lot of people that way. And I brought in business too.
What an interesting concept.
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. But I mean, just building a process around that was helpful.
Yeah.
And then there's also like value adds. Like when I go, like when I'm at like a conference, like I'm at Dreamforce now and I was at SASTRA last week. And it's like, I am not like too like very well known in tech, but what I get a lot is like, hey, you look familiar. Like, I think I've seen you before. You look so familiar. So I'm like at that level. And so I'm trying to get to the level where like people like know my name. When I show up to these conferences, which it happens occasionally, but it's not as much as obviously like I would like to see happen, for, you know, so that I think there's more value to create there, for my business. But, yeah, there's just so much value from hiring for new partnerships, for new relationships of every kind, like just producing, investing in the brand is just so freaking important. And it feels like a lot of people are posting when you're scrolling your feed, but it's really not that many people. It's really not. It's like 1% or something. So you should never feel like your space is too crowded or there's already all these people doing this. Like there's like 10 other people in your space doing it. Maybe like it's really, when you really stop to think about it, it's like, it's hardly any humans are doing this. So there's just such a huge opportunity to like, to build that recognition up to where you reach out to candidates, you go to a conference, you acquire new clients. It's like, it's right there for you. You just got to start doing it. Do it 6 months consistently. It can be a life changer. Really can.
Even if there's 100 people doing it, like it's a big world and there's a lot of people in it. And if you're building a brand properly, you're a bit polarizing, right? Like people either love you or hate you. And so, you know, if I have a completely different point of view than somebody else does, that's okay. I would have put my point of view out to the world, and the people that love that guy's point of view are going to go to that guy, and the people that like mine are going to come to mine. And, you know, I mean, I had Tim Sackett on here one time talking about how he had, somebody run into him in the airport and know who he was. And he was like, "Oh, I'm HR famous." And,
right.
And then I felt really cool because another guest that I had on had heard that and ran into him at a conference again and said, "Hey, you're HR famous." And I'm like, "Oh, that came from our show. Wow, cool."
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it's incredible the amount of, like, when you put something out there and you think no one's listening or no one's watching or no one's paying attention, people really are. And
yeah, they are. The flip side of that is be nice.
You got to be nice. Yeah.
You gotta be nice out there. You know, just, be careful if, you know, when you're commenting and, you know, these types of things, like what, you know, keep in mind when you're writing, sometimes people don't understand tone. So you have to be very thoughtful about what you put out there as well.
Yeah.
So one of the things I stopped trying to take like the devil's advocate, or I was like, if I thought I had a different perspective to add, I, for the most part, actually kind of stopped because, unless you had to be like over the top with like smiley faces and like stuff like that, because people may not understand your tone. And if it comes across too blunt, you can burn a bridge, right? So it's, It's, you know, a lot of human interaction in person is like body language, tone, these types of things. And when you're on social, you don't have those tools. It's like literally the words you use. And so you really got to be careful that you don't come across as tone deaf or too like overly the top blunt or detached in your communication. And that's been a learning curve for me, for sure. But it's, you know, it's just something to be thoughtful to as you're building your personal brand. So I just want to give.
I learned a long time ago when you're in sales and leadership and dealing with the public, you have to watch what you do, even as far down as driving in your car, man. You could throw road rage at somebody on your way to a meeting and find out that you're pulling into a meeting with that person you just flipped off. So,
oh God, what a nightmare. That's terrible.
All right. Well, I realize you're at a conference and you have a million things to do. So I appreciate you spending some time with us. If somebody wants to get a hold of you, how do they go about doing it?
Yeah. So James Mackey, Secure Vision, one word. Secure Vision is one word. You could just find me on LinkedIn. I host a couple of podcasts. One is called Talent Acquisition Trends and Strategy. That one's actually growing pretty quickly. And I have another one called Scale by Design. And Scale by Design hosts VCs as well as founder CEOs to talk about basically scaling companies. So you can check those out if you want. Securevision.io is my company's website if you want to learn more about what we do. But yeah, I'm around. I'm very available. I'm 100% in on relationships. So Brad, obviously if I can do anything for you or anybody listening, feel free to DM me. I'm all in on trying to help everyone in my network grow and be successful. So I'm looking forward to keeping the conversation open, Brad, for sure.
Awesome. I appreciate that. And I'm definitely going to add those two podcasts to my list. So
thanks,
it was great having you, and look forward to our next chat.
Cool. Thank you.